Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 327. No one is as surprised as I am. Sunday, May 12th, 2024. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. This podcast is supported by one-time and membership contributions to Ko-fi, and I am so grateful for all of the listeners who have supported me via Ko-fi. Each quarter, I offer up a prize to someone who has made a one-time or a membership contribution during that quarter. And for quarter two of 2024, I have not one, but two prizes up on offer. Because Sarah of Woolen Waves, Handmade Socks and More, is offering up another pair of handmade wool socks to one of our lovely listeners and contributors. Jenny, who was our first quarter winner of a pair of handmade socks, has already collaborated with Sarah and received her socks and is enjoying them. So if you would like that opportunity, the second quarter is a possibility for you. And this drawing will take place around June 20th. I will link to Woolen Waves Handmade Socks and More website on yarnsatyinhu.com. Sarah has some upcoming festivals and shows where she will be bringing her wares. She has a booth with her mom. One of those shows is coming up on June 1st. It's the Virginia Craft Fair at the Mustang Sally Brewery. Doesn't that sound like fun? Mustang Sally Brewery in Chantilly, Virginia. And Sarah will be vending there. So thank you, Sarah, for continuing to support the podcast with handmade socks. And I look forward to drawing the next winner. Our other prize for the second quarter of 2024 is a skein of Granville sock yarn, and this prize is sponsored by Battenkill Fiber Mill. Perhaps you've had a chance to visit Mary Jean Packer, Carol Foster, and the folks who help out at the Battenkill Fiber Mill booth at various shows and fiber festivals throughout the spring. And thank you, MJ, for contributing this prize. So both of those drawings will take place around June 20th. And all you need to do to enter is to be a member supporting Yarns at Yin Hu podcast on Ko-fi on a monthly basis or make a one-time contribution during the second quarter. I have not been able to attend Maryland Sheep and Wool or any of the other super fun spring fiber festivals in the area. I really like them because I like the attention on wool and spinning at these festivals at this time of year. But I was very fortunate to be able to attend for a few hours in the morning the Hudson Valley Textile Project Summit that was held at a golf course near Kingston, New York, in mid-April. And it was a great chance to see friends and to learn about all of the very important and exciting things that are happening thanks to all of the activism and the deep thinking and ingenuity of members of the Hudson Valley Textile Project. I will be providing a link to their site in case you aren't already a member. You should consider it. I urge you to consider it, especially if you participate in any aspect of the fiber community in the Northeast region of the United States. There are so many benefits to membership and lots of possibilities to exert your leadership. You all know that I've been a great proponent of the Clean Fleece Project, and one of the things we were able to get during this summit was kind of an update of the activities at Clean Fleece and how it really is making a difference for reducing the carbon footprint and assisting people who have smaller farms, smaller herds of sheep, in getting their fiber processed in the region. After lunch at the summit, we were treated to a fashion show that was put on by the students of Ulster Boises and their instructor in the fashion and fashion design program. It was really a great chance to meet and interact with the students of this program. They're high school students, many of them bound for fashion and textile programs at the college level next year. And since they were seated throughout the conference at our tables, they participated in conversation with us and talked about some of their views regarding fashion and sustainability. That was really one of the highlights of the summit for me, was to see how the training in this program sought to focus not just on the textiles themselves, but on how textiles come to be. And there were farm visits and factory tours and other components of the students' education that really built up to a more full understanding of the garment industry and its impact on the environment. The summit was a major undertaking for leadership members of the Hudson Valley Textile Project. They did an amazing job in putting together a showcase of everything that has come before, as well as the news and exciting things that we can look forward to. So, like I said, I was so fortunate to be able to attend, and this is an event I look forward to every year. During the weekend of Maryland Sheep and Wool, since I wasn't able to attend, there's kind of a lot going on around here, I had set aside a project for myself to kind of stay in touch with all of the energy and excitement that was happening at Maryland. Emily has sent me a portion of a Cary Hill fleece that she purchased last year at Maryland Sheep and Wool, and I was determined to do my scouring of that fleece over the last weekend. So in preparation for that, I put the fleece in a cold soak for about a week prior. And I like doing that because it helps remove some of the dirt and grease without any effort. In retrospect, I wish I had sat to open up the tips of this fleece prior to dumping it into the cold soak. Nevertheless, lots of dirt and oils were removed, and that stinky, sheepy fleece water is really great for watering new and emerging plants in my garden. They love it. So it's a great way to kind of get a job done quickly and then make use of all of that water. So then I had a three-step system for scouring the fleece after removing it from that soak water. And that involved, I have screaming hot tap water in my basement. So I lug that outside and I do one soak with some Dawn dish detergent. And then I move it to a second soak with a little bit of soak product. I have beautiful fig scent that I love. And then from there, just one plain soak, and then I remove all of the water that I can by pressing it out of the lingerie bag that I keep transferring from station to station, and then let that all dry. This weekend, I am working on opening up the tips of this fiber, and I have borrowed a drum carder from my friend Hope of Hope's Favorite Things to make some bats. The Cary Hill fleece was uncoated, So it does have a lot of dirt and debris, and I'm counting on the drum carter to remove that. One thing I noticed about this fleece is it has become really blinding white and with a really nice luster to it. So I think that would make the resulting yarn a great candidate for dyeing. And I've had some avocado skins and seeds in my freezer for a very long time, so perhaps this would be a good project for that. I have, I think, less than 2 pounds. I should have weighed this fiber before and after, but I was just so excited to get it soaking that I dumped it all in. So this is not a sweater quantity of fleece, but maybe something more along the lines of an accessory or a set of accessories. And I think it would be really fun to play around with some avocado dyeing for this fleece once it is all carded and spun up. Toward the end of April, I recorded a podcast episode in which I talked all about being nearly finished with socks and nearly finished with the Hatsuki sweater. And alas, I lost that entire episode. It was frustrating, but now I have the chance to tell you about some finished projects and include finished project photos in the episode. First to be finished is Hatsuki. This is a design by Ria Vive for a sleeveless, very loosely fitted top with wide ribbing as well as a lace pattern on the front of the garment. It's a cropped sweater, and the design encourages folks to knit with a yarn that has some plant fiber content. Initially, I had been thinking of knitting this as a wool sweater, and Mary Beth, who had already knit a version, really was successful in talking me out of it. And that was a great choice because I don't think I would have appreciated Hatsuki nearly so much if I weren't knitting it with a plant fiber-based yarn. I chose Lindy Chain. I had 4 skeins of this that I received a while ago as a gift from Mary Beth. And this fall, I dyed those skeins with indigo dye, and it took really, really well. Typically, plant fibers resist a great deal of the dye, so you get muted, very soft colors. In this case, the dye adhered very well and in a very consistent way to the fiber, which impressed me a lot. And in addition, there wasn't very much crocking. A lot of times when yarn has been dyed with indigo, especially a deep indigo, a lot of that color will kind of come off and stain your fingers as you're knitting. I did have a little bit of that. But for hand dyeing and rinsing it myself, I was really impressed with how little dye was getting on my hands and fingers as I knit. And I had just enough yarn to make the smallest size of this sweater on US-4 needles. I had 4 skeins of the Lindy Chain, and that was about 720 yards. The pattern calls for 830 yards for the smallest size. And it's not incredibly cropped. I think the thing that really made the difference for me in knitting this sweater with Lindy Chain is the unbelievable drape of the yarn. And so the weight and drape of it kind of pulls the sweater longer than it would with maybe any other type of yarn. Lindy Chain, as the name suggests, has a chainette construction. And so this gives it the drape and also makes it a lot easier on your joints as you knit, because often yarn with plant fiber content can be quite unyielding, and it can be very tiresome for your hands to work as you knit. This, I find, at least in my own experience, is not difficult to work at all. And I would definitely consider working with Lindy Chain in the future, and especially think about maybe purchasing pale colors that are on a deep discount with the thought of over dyeing them in a color of my choice. The thing I don't care for so much with Lindy Chain is I don't really like the color selection. It could just be the way the colors come across on screen, but they seem kind of shiny to me, and they just, I don't know, it just doesn't come up in the kind of colors that I enjoy. So having had such a success with over dyeing a few skeins of it, I would consider doing that again in the future. And it was a delight to work with. I'm going to get a lot of wear out of this top. And if you're looking for a summer top pattern, I would highly recommend this. Mary Beth has knit two of these. The first she did according to pattern instructions with the lace on the front. And then she knit another version with without the lace, just using the really deep rib. The neckline and the sleeves are finished off in a very pleasing, very simple way. And ultimately, it's a super wearable sweater for warmer months. Once again, that's Hatsuki, designed by Ria Vive. Another finished project is the pair of socks I've been knitting with Gail's Art yarn in the colorway Graffiti and Asphalt, which is a gorgeous speckled yarn. I have completed those. These socks are 3x1 rib with an eye of partridge heel and a double gusset on the bottom of the foot. They're exceptionally stretchy and nice fitting. I made the leg of the sock quite a bit longer than I normally do, but certainly it's not long by any standards. And likely I have enough of this yarn left for another pair of shorty socks or a pair of mitts or something like that. It was super fun to knit with this yarn, and I am looking forward to wearing these socks with my clogs. Having completed these socks, I'm now back to knitting a pair of socks from Knitspin Farms self-striping yarn. This is kind of a crazy mismatched sock pair that I'm knitting for my sister, and I had worked the entire cuff and both legs of these socks and then set them aside to work on the asphalt and graffiti. So now I'm back and I'm knitting a very traditional heel flap, heel turn, and gusset on the side of the sock and working my way down with those pairs and dreaming about what I'm going to cast on next, because I have quite a few skeins and partial skeins of Joanna's yarn waiting in the wings for a new cast on. I have recently finished my second hand-sewn all-well box top, and I am really enjoying the process of working on these tops with hand sewing. I'm trying to perfect my ability to sew with a very small, very fine needle, linen thread, and using a thimble. It's a super meditative process, and I really like the drape and the results of hand sewing these tops. So much so that I'm thinking of offering at least one session of a class to learn these techniques over the course of this summer. There are still details I need to get together namely photographs and things like that. But I have been thinking a lot about teaching some of these skills and having conversations about how learning through a slow process like hand sewing can later translate to machine sewing and the different points at which hand sewing can still be very valuable, even if you're starting to generate your handmade wardrobe using a sewing machine. So this has been extremely enriching for me. It's been a very helpful means of me to keep battling neuropathy and kind of keeping my fine motor skills as strong as they possibly can. And I'm also enjoying the way it's so portable. Part of what I enjoy about knitting so much is the portability of the project, and hand sewing offers this in a similar way. So if you're interested, you can contact me if you'd like to be alerted to more information about these classes, and I'll certainly share that. Or, you know, watch my space online and on Instagram in particular for more information about that coming. Probably during the month of June, I'll be putting that information out. In the meantime, I'm preparing for Art of Fiber, which will happen this coming weekend, May 18th from 5 to 8 at Orange Coffee Art and Music in Delaware Water Gap. I am so pleased and so proud to be helping 10 fiber artists exhibit their work in a beautiful show, and also to be celebrating my 50th birthday during that time. So the Art of Fiber opening is open to the public, and if you're in the area and interested in attending, you are most welcome. The show will continue during Orange open hours. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 10 to 3 until June 10th. And in addition, there are still a few tickets left for the Mending Equals Love Masterclass in Mending with Cal Patch on Sunday, May 19th from 10 to 1 at Orange. This class includes 3 hours of instruction, as well as a really nicely put together kit of materials and supplies that will both be useful during the class, as well as when you continue your mending journey after. Tickets for that will be linked on my website, but they're available through the Orange Coffee Art Music website. And I am so pleased that Cal is going to be coming to teach her workshop at Orange. So very much looking forward to that. So I have all of these finished projects, and I am auditioning some ideas for a sweater in my hand-spun yarn from Lenore's Fleece. I have over 1,000 yards of a 2-ply. It's kind of between a fingering and a sport weight. And I think I have found something that's a possibility. And in order to determine if I should go forward, I think I'm going to swatch. I know. No one is as surprised as I am that I might swatch for a sweater, because I pretty much never do a swatch. I think the last time I've talked about a swatch on this podcast is when I received some yarn to promote from Blacker Yarns, and I knit a swatch so I could talk to listeners about how the yarn handled and how it knit up. I typically don't swatch because I don't find a lot of value in the way I make a swatch compared to what's happening in a garment. Because of this, I do consider my start of a garment to be a kind of swatch, and I'm fully prepared And in many cases, I do need to rip everything out and start over based on the experience I'm having with the yarn and the kind of fabric I'm getting. So it's not like I always just pick up my yarn and needles and start a sweater and then finish it. It's just that I don't, you know, make a tension square typically as part of my process. But in this case, it seems like it might be helpful because I've identified the rib wave sweater. This is a relatively new pattern designed by Joanna Ong, and it was released on April 26th. And what I like about it is that it seems like a very pretty sweater. It gives the visual impression of a V-neck sweater, but it's not actually a V-neck. The neckline is more of a crew or something between a crew neck and a ballet neck shaped neckline, but it has V-type patterning that's achieved with some different types of cables and ribbing. It also seems like a very beautiful sweater that isn't precious. It's kind of the thing you could wear as an everyday sweater, but it's elevated. I haven't seen or knit any of Joanna Ong's sweaters, but in reviewing her work and listening to some of her test knitters talk about it, that's kind of the impression I get. So as I usually do, I was scouring the project pages of people who had test knit this sweater, and she had a very wide array of test knitters, which was cool. They put up patterns, they have notes, and one of them, Jackie, said, "Oh, I have a video podcast with my friend, and we talk about knitting this sweater." So I watched the first segment of Knitting a Good Yarn with Jackie and Carmen. They had each participated in the test knit. They have very different body types and very different tastes, it seems to me. So they knit two very different sweaters, talked about them, and then put each other's sweaters on, which I thought was really informative. So it encouraged me to further consider this sweater based on what they said. They've knit her patterns before. They really liked the instructions. They liked the combination of some interesting details and features of the sweater without it being overly fussy. And Jackie's sweater in particular was really a departure from the type of yarn called for because she often has a very loose gauge. And so she decided to knit the entire sweater with a single strand of sport weight yarn. And that was probably the most convincing element for me because she talked about how row gauge really matters when you have this V element to the design and you want it to end with your neckline. You don't want it to end near your navel because your row gauge is off. And that as a loose knitter, she was very concerned about this, and that's why she had this idea to swap out the holding two strands together kind of thing for this sport weight yarn she had. So given all that, given I saw two experienced knitters with beautiful sweaters having lots of great things to say about this design, I have rib wave in very heavy consideration for my handspun. And so the next thing will be to knit a gauge swatch to see how well I do at coming near gauge. See if it's close enough for me to give the sweater a start. Once again, that's Rib Wave by Joanna Ong. For Off the Shelf today, I'm going to share a poem by a new-to-me poet named Natasha Ray. She is a Brooklyn-based young poet born in 1994. She is highly awarded and applauded by other poets for her skill in writing. And I was really drawn to her poem titled, In My Next Life, Let Me Be a Tomato. Over the past several weeks, I've been doing a lot of gardening. And by gardening, I mean pulling a lot of weeds, because this spring, my plants were encased by and choked by weeds in a way that I have never seen before. And I estimated I needed about 100 hours of weeding in order to free these plants from the weedy mess to help them survive and continue growing. This is going to be year three for almost all of our property, because we removed invasive species from a big swath of land and planted new and mostly native plants. The first summer was an extreme drought, so lots of things didn't make it, and what did really struggled. Last year was a good year for plant growth, and so far this spring we have had a lot of rain. So I'm hoping that this will kind of be a real takeoff year for a great number of our plants, but they're not going to grow if they're choked by weeds. So I've been weeding. I don't plant a vegetable garden because I don't have a fenced area. Nevertheless, I have grown tomatoes. I enjoy a homegrown tomato. And Natasha Ray's poem really spoke to me. I hope it speaks to you. Here is In My Next Life, Let Me Be a Tomato. In my next life, let me be a tomato, lusting and unafraid. In this bipedal incarnation, I have always been scared of my own ripening. Mother standing outside the fitting room door. I only become bright after Bloody Marys, only whole in New Jersey summers where beefsteaks like baubles sag in the yard, where we pass down heirlooms in thin paper envelopes, and I tend barefoot to a garden that snakes with desire, unashamed to coil and spread. Cherry falls, brandy wine, sweet aperitif. I kneel with a spool, staking and tying, checking each morning after last night's thunderstorm, only to find more sprawl. The tomatoes have no fear of wind and water. They gain power from the lightning, while I, in this version of life, retreat in bed to wither. In this life, rabbits are afraid of my clumsy gait. In the next, let them come willingly to nibble my lowest limbs, my outstretched arm always offering something sweet. I want to return from reincarnation spin, covered in dirt and buds. I want to be unabashed, audacious, to gobble space, to blush deeper each day in the sun, knowing I'll end up in an eager mouth. An overly ripe tomato will begin sprouting, so excited it is for more life, so intent to be part of this world, trellising wildly. For every time in this life I have thought of dying, let me yield that much fruit in my next, skeleton drooping under the weight of my own vivacity, as I spread to take more of this air, this fence post, this forgiving light. Thanks for listening. I hope you find time this week for the crafting you enjoy. Be well.